So our first psalm this morning is Psalm 13, and a few introductory thoughts about it before we actually move into the psalm. You'll find as you read it, it's an urgent plea to God from a trusting and very grateful heart. The psalmist in this one has been suffering for a long time. And for a long time, God has seemed absent. We probably all know that feeling. So that's how you locate this. But the psalmist holds to his faith, sustained by the memory of past graces. And I think we all know the feeling of that too. To remember in the dark what you saw in the light. So you hold through a dark patch, even a long dark patch, because of what you already know that sustains you. And the psalmist, and we can do this too if it becomes a psalm for us, continues to trust that God will support him through his sufferings and will come and rescue him. Now you check all that, that's my summary of it, and as you first verse. How long, Yahweh, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I be plunged into grief? And the word for I here isn't just the pronoun, I've said it a few times, it's a Hebrew word nephesh, which is quite impossible to translate, I find. But nephesh is just not I, but it's, and I told you once before, for me the French word picks it up perfectly, the élan vital, it's I as longing, yearning, it's the energy, so it's got something more than just simply the pronoun. So it's my whole being is plunged in grief. My longings aren't getting there. My yearnings seem to be frustrated. My desires are not making it, you know. And I've been a long time like this. So how long is this going to go on, the psalmist says. This sorrow in my heart day and night. How long shall my enemy prevail over me? And I have a question that you can ask as you read the psalm. Is the enemy a person? Or is the enemy in this case actually death? Is it a matter of physical sickness primarily that's going to cause him the trouble? And he sees the enemy as death, which is constantly invading his life, and he looks like he's had a long illness. It might be that, it might be both. Anyhow, just for the moment, all he says is, how long will my enemy prevail over me? The feeling is really clear, isn't it? And I've given you another couple of texts here that might pick that up in other words, so we can get into the mood of it. Psalm 77, we'll find, reads, I commune with my heart in the night. I meditate and search my spirit. Will Yahweh spurn forever and never again be favorable? Has his steadfast love ceased forever? Are his promises at an end for all time? Pretty similar feeling. Will my prayer never be answered? For my children, for the one I love, for harmony, for peace in the world, whatever. Lamentations, you'd expect to be full of such pleas. Chapter 5, verse 20 reads, why have you forgotten us completely? Why have you forsaken us these many days? And with the thought that the enemy might be, and I think does at least include death, I remind you of Paul's statement in the Corinthians, the first book, chapter 15, verse 26, the last enemy to be destroyed, he said, is death. Verse 3, look at me, answer me, Yahweh my God. It's as though God is looking elsewhere and not paying any attention to my cry. Look at me, he says. Give light to my eyes, or I will sleep the sleep of death. Let not my enemy say, I have prevailed. Let not my foes rejoice to see me go under. People are probably happy to see the end of him. And he's pleading with this. And again, some New Testament texts that might just pick it up for you. Paul to the Ephesians, chapter 5, sleeper, awake, rise from the dead. Christ will shine on you. And the dead here is a dead inside, like a moral death or lack of hope or whatever it is that kills you from inside. So he's saying, wake up, sleeper, and Christ will shine on you. So we're asking God to wake up, and Paul's saying, maybe you need to wake up. Maybe God is looking at you, or as Teresa puts it beautifully, look at him, she says, he's always looking at you. So sometimes we project the problem out there, and it mightn't be, I'm not putting ourselves down, but it might be that we need to suffer longer to get the point. That maybe we don't heal as quickly as we could, because if we heal too quickly, we mightn't learn. So it's our readiness is mostly the thing with grace. And sometimes we need to do a bit of a journey, don't we, to be really ready to see. I don't understand all that, of course, but it's a thought that's got some value, I think. Here's Luke chapter 1, verse 78, using the same image of light. It's a beautiful text. It's in the Benedictus. By the tender mercy of our God, the dawn from on high will break upon us and give light to those who sit in darkness and in the shadow of death. It will break upon us. And quite beautifully, three or four verses later, chapter 2, is the birth of Jesus. So the light dawning, he's preparing us with that hymn from the early church. He's preparing us in his gospel for the dawning of the light at the incarnation, the birth of the Messiah. Similarly, in the prologue of his gospel, John says, the true light, which enlightens everyone, was coming into the world. So it's universal, it's for everyone. We don't ever want to think that God only, sometimes people speak as though God offers faith only to a few, or he hasn't given the gift of faith. No, God offers the gift of faith to everybody. Now sometimes we're not ready to see it, sometimes others are receiving it, but we don't recognize that they're receiving it because it's not like the one I've got. So sometimes it's our blindness. But God isn't not offering. Faith just means welcoming of grace. So God is offering grace to absolutely everyone. That's our teaching, that's our faith, that's happening. Well, faith is simply welcoming that grace. Now, people can be welcoming it in ways that we don't recognize. And that's our problem, not God's or theirs. But don't ever think that God is holding back. And lastly, again from the Ephesians chapter 1, with the eyes of your heart enlightened, you may know what is the hope that he has called you to. So the psalmist is pleading for light, and they're just some early reflections. And here's another one from the New Testament which picks it up in the ultimate sense of death being the last darkness, as it were, and I think relevant to our psalm. Here we have in the 1 Corinthians chapter 15, towards the end, verse 54, just read our faith as expressed by Paul. When this perishable body puts on imperishability, when this mortal body puts on immortality, then the saying that is written will be fulfilled. Death has been swallowed up in victory. Where, O death, is your victory? Where, O death, is your sting? And then he says something quite powerful. The sting of death is sin. Sin's the only real problem. And that's what brings death to our soul. And the power of sin is in the law. That needs a lot of explaining, and it's not my task to explain it now because I'm commenting on the Psalms. But Paul's attitude to the law is quite wonderful and quite profound and has to be studied in another place. But he's saying there, in the law itself, you see the power of sin. And the law can even be a burden that keeps us locked in sin too. There's a whole lot of things to be said there. But anyhow, this is the point of this. Thanks be to God who gives us the victory. We can't get it, but God gives it to us through our Lord Jesus Christ, the light of the world. And so to conclude Psalm 13, and then we'll open it up for discussion should you wish. As for me, says the psalmist, so he's living in this constant pain, long time prayer not answered, pleading with God to listen, and whatever's going on there we all know. And he says, as for me, I trust in your kindness. Let my heart rejoice in your saving help. I will sing to Yahweh because of the good that he has done to me. So he remembers the past, holds to it, doesn't let the long darkness overwhelm him, and now sings to the harp, because it's a psalm, his joy in God. The book of Sirach, or Ecclesiasticus, it's sometimes called by its Latin title. Sirach is the name of the author of this book. Jesus, son of Sirach, Jesus ben Sirach, a Jewish teacher of the second century before Jesus. And he writes, hasten the day, remember the appointed time. Let people recount your mighty deeds. So you'll get a lot out of the psalm that I'm not. But I mean, I think to me the key point of it is in the dark to keep remembering grace. Ignatius of Loyola very beautifully, very wisely, and at least at one period of my life. You don't have to know this, but you know, I had depression for a couple of years, some 12 years ago, for good reasons that I won't go into the reasons. But anyhow, I did. And you know how dark that can be. So that darkness, Ignatius Loyola has this principle. He says, whenever you pray, always begin with gratitude. And I must say, that kept me going. Because when you've got depression, you can't even be grateful for anything. Because it's all black. And nothing seems to make sense and all that. But what I found, anyhow, for the truth of it, is that I'd start praying and I'd be trying to think of something to be grateful for, and it's not easy. But there always was something. Could be the tiniest little thing that day. Or it might be two tiny things. Or it might surprise me. There were actually three. But little tiny things that you'd forget because it's dark. But if you look for the gratitude, you notice that it's not all dark. There are little rays of light, and that keeps it open, keeps the sky open. You know what I mean? Otherwise, it could just become all black. And the gratitude's a wonderful thing to do, to go back in gratitude. And we've all got stacks to be grateful for. And if you start with that, that's what our psalmist has done. He's holding on in memory to things for which he is grateful. And that sustains his hope that when he's ready or when others are ready, God is listening and God will respond, and it might even be a long time, but the grace is always there.